Entertaining. Are they actually legal in the sport?
They are, as long as they are done correctly. You cannot do them from the back or the side. They have to be done from the front.
And that's Darth Weasley with your sports moment of the day.
All about hitting it from the front. Slide tackle life.
I thought that was frat stuff.
You're right. Hit it from the back. Anyway. I'm Darth Rictus.
Darth Cogentes.
Darth Zero.
Welcome to the Darkstream Podcast. Now that we've covered soccer and all of its various intricacies, which are...
I give you a red card. You're done.
There we go. And...
Call me.
Why do we not have that in Magic? Do we not have yellow cards, red cards, any of that?
Because you'd have a red card all the time.
Just my hair color right there. Just it's red. Okay. Fair enough. I don't know. We do have rules for cheating that I suppose are more relevant now that paper's coming back, and they're trying to make a comeback with it. They haven't done the things they need to make a comeback with it, but they're certainly pretending to.
If we're going back to paper, some of these mechanics with how many keep track of this variable on this number of tokens on this card in your hand, things like it's like, whoa, I have like six different zones for exiled cards. Thank you, no.
Yeah, exert was kind of a little bit more, I think, than we wanted to do with keeping track of shit on paper.
I mean, it was...
Like, most people just kind of slide the card halfway out of the sleeve to mark that it was exerted.
Right.
And, that worked, I guess. But when we get into, like, we have tokens for lifelink, we have tokens for death touch, we have tokens for every creature ability, flying, vigilance, etc. And at least, like, +1/+1 and -1/+1s cancel out. But it's possible to be running a deck that uses both.
It is. Yeah.
And then what's the shit that's, like, in the command zone? You can get off of Planeswalker Ultimate sometimes.
Emblems?
Yeah.
Yeah. There's a lot more to it. I honestly prefer the game on a digital format for what we have now, especially because of the intricacies they've tried to push into the game. Like, I watched Slogurk play, and that's a popular tier one deck right now in Standard. I don't want to play that deck in paper. Like, flat don't want to try and play it in paper. Because the
trigger, cost.
Right. The cost is going to be variable on like three different cards at all times, and you're going to keep casting them. And then there's going to be like five triggers every time you do anything. It seems like a nightmare to navigate.
Do you remember the old school days of Thought Not Seer causing enough problems with triggers that people frustratedly left matches?
Yeah. Yeah, it was real bad. Actually, I did find out this week that Azorius Control is officially the most aggro deck on the ladder. Everyone scoops when they get behind. Everyone scoops. I got scooped from platinum into diamond because people were so upset when they got behind and I landed a Wandering Emperor. They just scooped every time. It was wild.
I guess they don't want to be scrappy.
Right.
Like, I will say
turn six kills with Azorius Control consistently.
Playing against white-blue control is kind of like, if I'm just doing a ladder and not a tournament and I hit against white-blue control, I just scoop the match and load up a new one. It's not worth my time to waste on that. It's like, oh, you're going to take 20 minutes of my life on your turns and I'm going to take two. No, this isn't worth it.
See, and now we know why I keep winning. Oh, shit.
Yeah. I guess it kind of depends what your goals are.
Yeah.
Like, if you want to climb the ladder and it's a tier one deck, you better learn how to play against it, and just, it's going to be a slow climb. Yeah. Or you can play the deck yourself if you're ready for those mirror matches.
Or just play the deck that beats the shit out of it. And there's always the beauty of this standard, as much as people have ragged on it, is I know it's a 3-year rotation, but we have a very diverse meta right now. There are 8 tier one decks potentially, and they all have differences. Like, whatever has the target on its back gets fucking wrecked the next week. Domain had a huge target on its back coming out of the Pro Tour. I think it got like 5 top eights total out of 11 events this week. Because just everybody hated it.
Might also be the skill level of players involved too. That can fluctuate a lot. When you take things off of Pro Tour and put it into the general populace, you'll see decks that Pro Tour, it went, you know, X and one throughout the event. And then people going, I can't get it to win. It's because the intricacies of some of these things are so tight that if you don't understand the turn at which you have to make this decision to not do something that's basically just draw, go, play, land, tap, the game's over.
I get the argument. The difference I see here, one, is as far as complex decks and standard goes, Domain's at the bottom rung. It's right next to Mono Red in terms of lines. It will tell you what you're allowed to do pretty quickly every game. And second of all, I will say that these were huge events. Two of them were regional championships with grinders that are regularly on the Pro Tour trying to grind back on.
Okay.
And it just wasn't doing well, but a deck as complex as Slogurk took down one of them. And that, to me, is one of the most complex decks to pilot correctly in Standard right now. Like, you can pilot it kind of like half-assedly and get there, but if you play it tight, that deck is really good. But I don't want to learn it.
If you want Carpal Tunnel, you can play it really well, because using the... Oh, what relic is it that the Legends tap for mana?
Relic of Legends.
Okay.
Relic of Legends and mana.
Right. That's on me. But man, trying to do that when you're trying to play quickly... My wrist started to hurt after like one match. I'm done with this deck.
Yeah.
I clicked close that browser in the other window.
I clicked less with Cat Oven.
It's actually true. Cat Oven is less clicks, which is kind of wild.
Oh my God, really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I haven't encountered any of the Slogurk stuff. I've mostly been playing Draft, but I got to Platinum, so I quit. And then in Standard, I got to about there, but then I've just been playing Brawl.
So if you have Rona, Relic, Rutstein, Vile Smasher, you have an infinite damage loop because you're going to use Relic and Rona to provide two mana for Rutstein, which is going to get you another Rutstein.
The Rutsteins reduce their own cost by one.
Right, and then Vile Smasher's in place whenever an outlaw hits the battlefield, you deal one damage to your opponent.
That's so
But to do
annoying.
This, you have to get through 8 clicks a loop, I think. So one damage per 8 clicks. So yeah,
there are several other cards people are running in there. There's like a 5-drop reanimator. I think it's red black that also whenever an outlaw like leaves play, it deals damage equal to it to speed it up.
Oh, I've seen that. What's Rakdos joins the party or something.
Joins up. Okay. Rakdos joins up. Yeah.
Rakdos rolls up.
Yeah. It should have been Rakdos rolls up. That was a fucking flavor fail. Man.
We knew this was coming because when Azarak, the Lich Lord guy that's, you know, bounces itself over and over if you just don't choose the prime dungeon. That with the coalition or the legendary coalition relic.
You mean
thing.
Relic of Legends?
Yeah, I'm just my brain is not getting that card in his mind. But that deck used the same thing and it didn't work in Explorer online because there was too much clicking.
Yep. And to be fair, every time I saw Slogurk played on camera at the Pro Tour, there were slow play warnings. And it wasn't like they were trying to play slowly. It was just like, you are taking up too much of both of your clocks.
Yeah, that's totally fair, though. Because some of these decks that just take fucking forever, I want to see people that are absolute masters at them. Because, yeah, if regular play, like competent play, is going to take 2/3 of the clock just for that deck to do, fuck you. Get warnings.
Right. And, I mean, it was even in the top 8 of the Pro Tour where there are no time limits where the warnings were getting extended over this.
Yeah, warning for your stupid, boring deck. Warning for playing eggs with creatures. Yeah,
that really is a nice way to summarize Slogurk, eggs for creatures.
Actually, I feel like that would be an absolutely fantastic ban policy. If a deck feels like eggs, it gets banned. Like, eggs combos just get banned. Yeah. If there's a deck that... even playing it competently and at a reasonable speed takes up a disproportionate amount of time of every match. Let's just get rid of it for our quality of life.
Would the old Kethis combo stuff, would that qualify? 100%.
Yep, absolutely.
Okay. Same with those Underworld Breach decks. 100%. Those are so goddamn annoying. So yes, those are quality of life bans, and I wish they had them for Constructed, because we do it with the cube, and it's the right call.
Yeah.
Every fucking time. It prevents so much bullshit with the cube. Which occasionally sucks because we see cards we really like, but quality of life matters more than the shiny new toys.
Yeah.
Which I hope Wizards is going to learn that lesson with Alchemy, because that really was the lesson of Alchemy.
They've learned that lesson in some places. You know, cards that used to have optional positive triggers are now mandatory positive triggers.
Fair.
Like your... Oh, I can't remember the name of it, but the white, one white mana for a 1/1. Whenever another creature enters the battlefield, you may gain one life. That old card.
Soul Warden. Yeah.
It either got eroded or they printed like a functional reprint and just got rid of the may.
Yeah.
Because it's okay. You gain. Now in paper, that can cause different problems because then both players miss triggers or whatever. But I believe there's been a ruling in place for that for a long time, which is sorry.
What's like the number of cards that gained different subtypes on creatures?
Mm-hmm. But when you're playing online and every time a creature enters the battlefield and the little box comes up, do you want to do the action of gain one life?
Like,
especially when you're doing something that dumps a bunch of creatures into play.
See, this is where they should have gotten that old Microsoft Clippy thing to come in, like Navi the Fairy, and just be like, are you sure you want to gain that life?
Clippy is back. Clippy's a new AI program for
is
all
it?
Of those now. Yeah.
Okay, tell me about
all your
this.
Office stuff is, it's got a new name. Maybe it's like Clyde or something.
okay, Clippy's but, reformed. It's Clyde.
No, there is a new Clippy. It's just an AI now, but it is essentially just Clippy again.
Okay.
Better than it was.
There kind of is an arena Clippy. There's that
little blind,
yeah, that little
Navi the Fairy
thing.
From Legend Zelda Ocarina of Time.
That shows you how the platform works
badly
that you can play against if you want.
Yeah, I wish they had that thing just do the exact Ocarina of Time every time you logged in. It just goes, hey, listen, just every time.
Nay,
oh, yeah, that would troll so many people. I would love it.
I spent a few minutes looking for how do I turn off this stupid thing? I just want it's new sets, things like that. I'm like, it's back again.
Yep.
Every or the fresh time you install after Guess deleting the program, back. It's like, oh, go
back
away.
Again.
Navi's back.
Is it just called Sparky?
Yeah. Yep. Because the Planeswalker Spark War that you sparks. Got.
Oh, fuck. Really?
Yep. It's based on your thing. Planeswalker Spark is talking to you.
You
That's
are
Sparky.
The walker of the planes.
My Planeswalker Spark is really annoying. Goddamn.
I know. Sparky doesn't spark up. That's the fucking problem. Otherwise, Sparky'd be fucking chill.
Yeah. That could if be Rakdos the next thing. Rolled up and Sparky sparked, that'd be something.
There we go. These are the cards that need to be designed.
Yeah.
Squee smokes them out.
This like Western theme, that's fine or whatever, but like give me a Compton themed set now.
How does Oko not have a blunt in his hand? That's all I'm saying. It's a Western theme. There should at least be a cigar.
Somebody points like a sideways gun at Oko and it just turns into an elk in their hand.
That's just funny. I want to see a gun like grow little horns and
Has anybody even used Big Oko out of this set? I haven't seen that.
No, there's
at
I
all.
Found a reason
I got
to play
it in the draft.
Well, was it good in the draft?
It was good. Yeah, it was pretty good. I only drew it in a couple of games and it didn't stay on the board very long. I don't remember exactly what happened. I'm pretty sure I won those games.
Yeah.
Because it is kind of a resource drain getting rid of that card, but
sure.
I have not tried it and constructed.
Fair. I saw there was a Simic Cookies list that made it to the top 8 of the Montreal Regional Championship, and it was playing one copy of the new Oko on the sideboard. And I'm like, what are you for?
It might be someone just wanting to play with a card.
Right. Is that like the Jerry T. Black Cat, but it's Oko?
There's a lot of times the 14th and 15th cards in my sideboard have been like, I don't know. Fuck it, right?
Y'all remember back in the day in paper, I'd be like, what's your sideboard like? There's a goblin game. Why? Because I can.
You never know when you want to play a game with goblins. You never know. Wow.
It's good stuff. Just sometimes you play with that extra slot. That's why the companion made so much sense. You're like, yeah, I only need a 14-card sideboard.
Or, you know, sometimes even when it's something like that, and I know that maybe I've got dead cards in a matchup, so I'll just put a one of something I want to try on the sideboard.
Sure.
And just see how it works in that circumstance.
Okay. See that.
Corner case, what are you doing? I put an Emrakul. Why? There's a mill deck somewhere.
That is actually...
I decided in.
That's actually kind of a thing right now.
Oh, is it again? No.
Yeah, Temuramp is running one copy of Turn the Earth because it has flashback to shuffle 3 cards from your graveyard into your library. Because all these Azorius Control players are on Jace to mill people out.
Mm-hmm.
So they mill you out and you're like, actually, World Soul, World Soul, World Soul. Hit, hit, hit. You better have 3 straight counters. So it's a whole thing. I don't know. I've not had a lot of issues taking down Temuramp, but some people are real into it.
Yeah. I like that the tactic's there. It's funny.
I mean, I like that Wizards tried really hard to get rid of fetches and then they ended up with like a deck filled with shit fetches. Yeah. That works.
Yeah.
Just all tier 1.5 to 2 fetch lands and it plays 12.
Yet another card or yet another deck's not playing standard.
Yeah, that's, I mean, I actually love it for online play, but I would never play it in paper because infinite shuffling. But online, it's super easy, so I don't give a shit.
I love fetch lands online.
Yeah, it's amazing.
I realized that we had Prismatic Vista now in Historic. That changes things a lot.
Oh, shit, we do, don't we?
Mm-hmm.
Although, is Historic still a thing, or is it Timeless now?
There's both.
Okay, there is both. What's the difference? Do we know?
Yes. There's not as many busted cards in Historic.
And Historic has the altered cards from Alchemy, and Timeless does not.
Okay. It's hard for me to tell because, like, for instance, we have Modern Horizons 3 coming out, but it's also got a commander set that's not Modern Legal that's coming out with it called Modern Horizons 3 Commander. And it's filled with really powerful cards, but none of it's straight to Legacy Vintage.
This is kind of part of why Brawl has been appealing.
Yeah.
Because I just fucking put anything in the deck.
That's fair. That's fair. I don't know. Have you guys seen the Modern Horizons 3 spoilers at all?
I looked at a few cards, but...
Anything that intrigued?
Nothing was like, ooh, I'm excited.
I see that they're putting in even more Goyfs in the Commander's scenario, and the Goyfs are starting to affect other Goyfs. So I'm like, are we going to have Goyf Sliver like vibes rolling through here shortly?
Sure. Or like when we had a Togatog, are we going to get Goyf Goyf?
Right, because Necro Goyf's coming in, and then there's like another Goyf and possibly a third coming in. So I don't know. We may end up with the all Goyf deck here at some point in the future.
Five color legendary Goyf Goyf.
Yeah. Yeah. I hope
we have Necrotogs, so Necro Goyf just fits.
Right. Right. Although, to be fair, isn't every Goyf kind of a Necro Goyf? Because they're all based on graveyards, no?
No, they're not all based. Are they all based on graveyards?
They are. Okay. It just depends on what.
What in the graveyard?
Land, creatures in both of ours, you know?
I know one of them looks for instants and sorceries.
Yes. I don't know. Either way, I'm excited to see if they do that, but they're pushing most of them into the Commander set, so they'll be Legacy, Vintage, and therefore probably unplayable.
See, and all of these weird things with lots of tokens, that works great for Commander, because everyone loves to bring all of their homemade tokens and that stuff, and it's fun.
Yeah, Commander really is the place for all the extra, and it does a great job of that.
Yeah.
Constructed play, you kind of want the experience to be somewhat streamlined, because time constraints. But Commander, you know... Three friends, two beers.
I do appreciate the separate printings on that level. I remember when, like back in Conflux, for example, they were designing the standard sets with Commander in mind.
Okay.
And there were all these like 7-mana creatures that suck.
Yeah.
And it was like, well, it's for Commander because it's slower. And maybe people used them and maybe they didn't. I have no idea because I wasn't really playing at the time. But that was just over and over and over, and like, why is this 7-mana dirtily mythic rare in this set?
Sure.
Well, it's for Commander. Why is this, you know, card that sucks unless you have 3 opponents in this set? That's for Commander. And cool, you know, I'm glad it got support at some point, and it continues to.
But
yeah, it takes up design space in the set. And then, yeah, like if you're a standard player, if you're a constructed player, and you're cracking packs of this, there's just so many cards you don't want to open in the mythic slot.
Yeah. Although, you know, given what they've been doing with the latest set, there's so many cards you do want to open now in the mythic slot because Oko is in the mythic slot that you can open and draft right now.
Wait, what?
Am I wrong on this? This was on the bonus sheet.
I was OG not aware Oko? Of that.
Yeah.
I haven't seen it.
I haven't seen it either.
It's really rare to open anything on that bonus sheet. But my understanding is Okos are in there, Leyline Binding, Mana Drain. These are all cards that you can open up and draft.
Oh, no, it's not rare to see those. I've seen Mana Drain. I've seen a lot of these things. I have not seen Oko.
Okay.
I usually get a couple Repulse, you know, every other draft.
Interesting.
Yeah, interesting. They're not that rare.
From my understanding, there is old school, like OG Oko, though, that's available to be gotten. And that one is hard to get. But if you get it, like, holy fuck.
I mean, yeah, that is a
powerhouse. We all remember how oppressive that card was.
Yeah, if I was in a draft and somebody played like old Oko against me, I'd probably just scoop.
Just like, no,
I had a commanding lead.
I have enough PTSD. No more.
Yeah. I have found a draftable build around card for the Thunder Junction thing. Breaches. The
really?
Red, blue, and one.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just that powerful.
Really?
I want to try and figure out if it's constructed viable, but seriously, as soon as I got it on the board, I'm like, if my opponent does not have a removal for this right now, I will win this game. I get to double spell or triple, quadruple spell every single turn.
Fair. I did get to see a really fucking sweet constructed brew. I'm hoping somebody figures out how to break this. Forever and ever, we've looked at like Friction Dragon Engine and that Mishra card and, you know, how they meld together into the Walker. And everybody wants to make it work, but like, God damn it, it never quite does, right? Like, you play Dragon on 3, Mishra on 4, somebody kills one of them, there you go, that's that.
And because the Mishra card's kind of bad.
Right.
Yeah.
But there is the new split card, push-pull out of the new set, and I believe polar, one of the sides costs 6 mana, reanimates 2 cards out of your graveyard, gives them haste and like the exile at the end, but that they just meld and you have your walker and you win on the spot. You're now swinging with a 9/9 and 3 triggers.
That's not bad.
Yeah.
That's not bad.
I got fucking ranched by that on the ladder and I was like, that's amazing. I'm not even mad. I just want your deck list.
I finally gave in and built the Waste Knot enchantment deck.
Yep. All over Pioneer.
Oh man, that's really fun.
It's all over Pioneer right now.
I would believe it. The same deck's legal in Extended, except for you don't get Urborg. That's the only card.
You mean Explorer?
Tomb of Yawgmoth? Yeah, Explorer to Pioneer.
Okay, you said Extended. I keep doing that.
Like, my brain keeps, it doesn't, it's just like Extended. I like that word. It was a good format.
It was a good format. I remember Food Chain Goblins. Yes, those were good days.
It was good while it was good.
Yeah.
Pernicious Deed got played. Okay, that's a sign of a good format.
Good goddamn magic. We are paper boomers.
What are you doing? I don't know. I've got an enchantment that blows up the board.
Oh, God. I remember when Psychotog was busted. Those were good days.
Psychotog upheaval was a powerhouse. That's the important thing.
I remember when Curdape was banned.
I remember when Curdape was good.
First they came for my twin, then they came for my pod.
What do you have in your deck? Well, I've got 4 Curdapes and I've got 4 Gosbon Ogres. Oh man, that's your deck is powerful. Yeah, I've got 4 Lightning Bolts, 4 Giant Growths, and a Berserk in there too. 4 Bloodlust as well. 4 Curse Scroll.
Oh, got him.
Bloodlust. That's a card that should be reprinted. I missed that one.
I think you could print Curse Scroll now and it would be mid.
I think so too. I think it would see plenty of play though.
Yeah, if I were playing so I would fit one into the 75 of any of my like Golgari Jundi type decks because you run out of cards all the time.
Sure.
And I would put 1 or 2 in the 75 of any kind of really fast aggro like mono red, mono white, whatever.
Sure.
But so many of these decks, like you're holding cards most of the game.
And paying 3 mana to deal 2, even if it's consistent.
4 mana the first time.
Well, okay, right? Yeah. But I mean, that's still not actually that powerful.
There's not that many game states anymore where we go into top deck wars and then kind of scrabble through it. So many cards can come off the top of the deck that just undo the game.
Yeah. It's a lot of throwing sledgehammers at each other, and the last sledgehammer to go gets there.
Right. So, like, imagine on my turn, I curse scroll you and then make my land drop because I whiffed, and cool. At least I got some value.
Sure.
And then you go sick, Atraxa. I could have done like 8 damage to you. That it doesn't matter anymore.
And that attracts us through a cavern of souls. So go fuck yourself with counterspells.
Well, you're probably not playing that if you're in a scroll deck anyway. But
point. Yeah. That was basically the finals in a nutshell of the Pro Tour was I have all the counters. Fantastic. Anyway, cavern of souls.
Like in Golgari, that would actually be, I don't know if I'd main deck it, but I'd consider sideboarding it. I would never play it against somebody who had attracts though.
No.
I would want that against hyper aggro decks where I'm just going to like blow all my cards and then sometimes they've got a creature and you just top deck 3 lands in a row and they get you.
The problem is I don't even think that's good enough against the hyper aggro because the best hyper aggro deck right now is Boros Convoke and Curse Scroll's way too slow to play against them.
It's not too slow at a given point in the game. Like sometimes against them, it's like I'm barely in the game for like 6 turns and either I can get over the top or they can get over the top. And if I had that going for 6 turns, that would change things.
Yeah, if you sweep them right or prevent one of their neat tricks, like when they go to Gleeful and you just blow up the artifact and then they tend to lose the game.
Oh, my one for one removal becomes 2 for 1 removal.
Yeah. Yeah. It's difficult because that deck reloads at a much higher level than it did before this latest set. Now that it has Nurturing Pixie, its reload capability is pretty absurd. But I see where you're going. That said,
yeah, in the end, it might not work, but I would at least fucking try it because I can see the dynamics of why it would.
Right. Right. Like if you get ahead and they're in top deck mode, you're going to be able to just force them to hold cards for like 3 turns till they can blow all of them at once. And then you're still picking them off with scrolls,
mm-hmm.
which is a problem.
And scroll lets you play Bolt the Bird. Everyone knows that's a fundamental of Magic.
I mean, yeah. Do we even have good birds right now in Standard? Do we have anything like that that's decent?
Not really.
We've got the one for Dinos, but Dinos is unplayable.
I think they're trying to stay away from that level of powerhouse of card. I mean, wasn't Birds of Paradise a staple of core set for I don't know how many years?
I suppose it doesn't help that most of the three drops are really strong right now, and the power differential between two and three is enough that people are spending a lot of two drops on just counter spells.
Yeah.
You know, like, remember when we had Fable in Standard and everybody was on Grixis and they were asked, like, why do you run four Make Disappear? Like, because you have to counter Fable on curve or you lose.
Yeah, can you imagine how much that would suck if it's, like, turn one bird and then you go, okay, land, pass. They're like, turn two, yeah, Fable.
Yeah.
And then what do you play another land and play your ley line of Oblivion Ring and get rid of the enchantment, but now this thing's
a bird itself
hitting you for two. Yeah, and giving them treasure.
Right. Or in current Standard, like, Wedding Announcement, Rafine. Couldn't even O-ring a fucking Rafine because it has ward. Like, no, it's a problem. It's a real problem.
It's also really good against decks that try and use sacrifice effects for removal. Mm. So, like, if they're trying to hit you with a Liliana Sack ability, like, all right, goodbye, birdie. Goodbye. I've made my fourth land drop. You did your job.
Yeah, essentially, like, goodbye, land drop, moving on. I already got the value.
Golden Goose was seeing play for quite a while just because it was even a one-turn bird.
It also can gain you a lot of life in games that stagnate. It's mm-hmm. a really annoying card. It's another one that's like, it's so good, but you've got to click it a bajillion times.
I ran it in Devo Green for a couple weeks, and it was pretty effective, but then a new set came out. And it's like, this is just too crappy.
There's not so much to be doing with your mana in Standard. Like, all these lands that can just fix your mana and attack and win the game.
Yeah, we have basically perfect mana in Standard right now. We have all of the fast lands, all of the slow lands, all of the creature lands. We have Traums.
Lots of lands that can be tapped to do effects and give you cards.
Yeah, tons of them. So many that you don't even bother with most of them.
Yeah, to the point, like, you could be making a monocolor deck and be asking yourself, okay, which of these do I want?
I mean, mono black has to remember to include enough swamps because you can absolutely run too low on sources just with monocolor options.
Right.
And I've done it.
yet another reason Cursed Scroll probably wouldn't do so great, because there's rarely a turn where you can't use your mana.
Yeah, Cursed Scroll would have to compete with every turn Murex, basically.
That said, I would love to see it reprinted at, like, Uncommon. That would be amazing in a draft format.
Yeah, that would be some spice.
I would love to see, like, original Masticore reprinted at Uncommon. Or kind of like what they did in this set where, like, there's Repulse in it, but it's an uncommon of kind of subset of cards. What are they called?
Commander set or something?
No, the stuff that's in the packs that's the old cards.
The extra score sheet or whatever fuck? Bonus sheet, whatever?
The bonus sheet.
Yeah.
So really, yeah, like, so like Repulse, for example, is on that as an uncommon, so it shows up a lot.
Right.
You know, like Darth Zero said, having a couple in a deck, that's pretty normal. So, you know, throw in Cursed Scroll like that. Throw in Masticore like that.
I can see it, yeah.
Because probably neither one of those cards would see Standard play, but God, they're fun.
I mean, Brightside, with the firing of the latest president of WotC, we have a decent chance of maybe getting somebody who's interested in helping the game get to where it needs to be. They are going to do some heavy work on Arena this year, they said. The entire UI is getting, like, worked on because they realized they designed it on, like, the shittiest platform they've ever made.
If they bring in Infinite or create a loop and say, just trigger it, that would be big. They also need to have lend a deck. And what would be the other good one? There was one other one that was everyone was wanting. Besides lending a deck, besides having the infinite
spectator
loop.
Spectator mode.
Spectator mode, thank you.
The rumor is that spectator mode's coming, and they're going to bring the tournaments from Moto into it as well. So there's going to be, like, arena challenges that are built for tournament competition only.
You mean that you'd want to keep playing them?
You know,
because arena challenges right now, it's like, no.
Right. Like, most of the stuff you see now is not fun. But if you were actually in, like, a round-based tournament that isn't shitty, mm-hmm. I would be interested. I mean, people have been looking for that on the digital landscape for quite some time. So
there's something fundamentally more interesting about playing a tournament than just trying to get seven wins before you get your third loss.
Definitely.
Yep. I much prefer the tournaments. I don't know. I think it's about everybody. It's a community thing to me. Everybody's in the same fucking pool going at it. Like, you have common ground with anybody you want to talk to in that pool.
I mean, I get the utility of this many wins before that many losses, and that it shortens up queue times.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't want to get rid of it for that reason. But yeah, let's do both. Let's have some tournaments too where we're like, we are locked in for our pool of players.
Maybe they'll give us private drafts. They've talked about that before.
That would be cool. I mean, everybody that tests fucking wants that so badly.
Come on, everybody who drafts just wants to be able to play the people out of their own pool.
There's that. There's like every pro has been screaming for that for so long anyway.
It just is kind of dumb.
The strategy of being like, oh, I'm going to counter draft this card.
You can kind of do that a little bit, but it's only worth doing when you literally don't have a pick.
Yeah.
Because, you know, you're drafting at the same time as the rest of this pool. So you might play them because you're all going to go into the queue around the same time.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, when I draft like a Grixis deck.
Yeah.
And then round one, I play against a Grixis deck. I guess that could happen in an 8-person pool, but probably fucking not.
They also probably wouldn't have the same goddamn cards I do all the way down.
Right, including a lot of the rares.
Right.
I had 2 breaches in my deck, because I know I did because it was mine, and my opponent played a breaches as well, which told me they weren't from my pool, likely.
Yeah, the odds of 3 breaches in 24 packs is pretty goddamn low. The odds of 2 is pretty fucking low, but 3, Jesus.
Yeah, it was great. I picked it, and then someone passed me another one. I'm like...
Well, we meet again. The little goblin pirate, look at it go.
Such a silly card.
They need more silly goblin cards. Frankly, I miss cards like Goblin Grenade. I just want more ridiculous goblins in every set.
Now, Goblin Grenade is a card that I think we could bring back into the into Standard. I think it's viable.
I'm fine with it. I mean, they gave us herd migration, a card that fundamentally is amazing at the top end and the low end, and gains you life and fixes your mana. Why not a 1 mana blow up your goblin, take 5? You've already got perfect count. 2 herd migrations. You're already back to it.
I just want to have goblins kill children and stuff.
Yeah, that'd be nice too. Just from a standpoint of Shelly. I'm on board just for that.
There's
actually
a lot of other 5 drops now too that are there. And plenty of 4 butts too.
It might be a little much if it could target creatures.
I'm just saying bring Goblin Grenade straight back.
I'm in for it.
I don't think it's going to imbalance any strategies for aggro. There's no like Goblin Pile Driver. We don't have Reckless Bushwhacker. There's no Goblin Lackey.
They're just going to print like a 3-mana Siege Gang Commander.
And that could occur.
There's a 4-mana Miner one right now. So, yeah, maybe.
But that's different. 3 and 4 mana is a world.
It is, especially without a bird.
Look at how Teferi got adjusted.
Yeah, look how Oko got adjusted.
Right.
3 and 4 mana, a world of difference.
Very different. Very fucking different.
Oh, man.
Come on, the good old one casting cost Planeswalker, Deathrite Shaman.
That was such a good walker. That was my favorite walker, frankly.
It's another reason I like playing Historic, because I can play it in my Jund deck with, you know, the Vistas to fuel it a little bit, and the Lilianas.
Is there confident in yet?
No. No, that's really the last piece that's missing, because Abrupt Decay is there, Maelstrom Pulse is there, Bloodbraid Elf is there.
Are you fucking with Caustic Bronco yet?
I haven't tried it yet. The last time I was playing Historic Jund, I maybe was death sticking a little bit too much. And when I finished the session, I had like 4 Stone Rains in my main deck, which just tells me I was doing wrong things. Because, yeah, I started fucking around with, like, I think my favorite addition for the Eternal formats from this set is actually Dust Bowl.
Okay.
Because I had a couple colorless land slots that I previously put in for, you know, the one-offs where you pay 1 or 2 and sack it and blow their non-basic up and you both fetch a basic.
Field of Ruins.
Yeah, those kind of things. And now it's just Dust Bowl, which totally supports, I want to play 26, 27 land anyway, fuck it. And sometimes Dust Bowl just wins the game for me by itself.
Blow up your man land.
Or no, just like this, like sometimes I'm on the play and they've got their third land, they make whatever play they do, I'm playing a bunch of removal, so I fucking kill it. I untap, I drop the Dust Bowl, I blow up one of their lands that fixes, and then they don't have a land drop to make after that.
And you potentially put them off a color to set them back even more turns.
Right. So now they're on 2 mana, it comes back to me, I'm playing 26, 27 lands, so now I'm back to my 4th land drop. I could put you down to 1 mana now.
Fair.
Or I can play Bloodbraid Elf.
Fair.
It's pretty fucking wild just doing it once, which had me thinking like, yeah, Stone Rain would be great, but no. when your land isn't casting Stone Rain, it's not that great.
Bloodbraid into Stone Rain is still cool.
Yes.
You know, that is cool.
Yes. Bloodbraid into Liliana is a lot cooler.
Yeah.
Bloodbraid into Blightning was my favorite.
See,
that was hot. But Blightning used to be able to tag Planeswalkers.
Yeah.
And listeners, if you don't know, because it's been a while, Blightning is a sorcery, black-red 1 target player discards two cards and takes three. And back in the day, you couldn't target planeswalkers. So you redirected damage from players to planeswalkers. Some cards got eroded, some didn't. Like Lightning Bolt presently says three damage to any target.
Right.
Because if it was the old version, like old Lightning Bolt, as its text was creature or player, there's no way to tag planeswalkers with that text.
Yeah. Lightning did not, though.
But yeah, Blightning still says player. They didn't errata to say or planeswalker. Because that was kind of the thing, right? Is you'd Bloodbraid Elf, and then you'd hit the Blightning, and between the Blightning damage and the Bloodbraid Elf damage, you killed their Jace, the Mind Sculptor. And with the two discards, you undid the advantage that Jace created for them, even over like two turns.
This feels like it'd be an interesting social experiment. Just message whoever we think has the ability to change an errata Blightning every single day, asking for it, and see, like, that's just, let's see how long it takes before they're like, fine, could, fuck
like,
it.
Find, like, make a Twitter bot that can tweet at people, and most of the Magic people are probably on Twitter. So you just set up a bot to tweet at them every day, like, make this change to Blightning. Yeah. And then maybe we'd get our way, and they think we'd go away, but then, like, no, we'd come up with some other dumb shit we want.
I figured out finally where each piece of the Magic community resides on social media. So like Commander players are all about Facebook. They love Facebook. The trolls and the people that are like really into different art and or just like weird racist shit are between Facebook and Reddit.
Oh, Reddit.
Okay. They go back and forth between the two. The competitive community is diehard Twitter and they are so upset all the time.
And Discord.
Yeah, they do very specific Discord servers.
Okay, which Magic players are on Truth Social?
I have no idea. I've never been on that.
I don't think there's that many people. That's you know what Truth Social is, right?
No.
It's Donald Trump's social media platform that
keeps losing.
He had someone made when he got banned from Twitter.
Okay.
That had an IPO recently, and it had an IPO that like billions of dollars.
$6.9 billion, I believe.
Right. Was the initial valuation. The stock has been fucking dropping like a stone since.
And then
because
when it dropped, they decided to already do a split to raise money of it.
And he's also suing the other people. He's like trying to Zuckerberg them.
It's crazy.
The other people that own controlling shares and trying to strip them of their shares on the basis of like they could have done a better job.
Just keep in mind, this is also the thing that I've never seen anyone on any of the recommendations say, yes, this is something to invest in, because it just keeps going down and they keep having to have more money flux in.
Yes, it loses double digits of millions every year.
Yeah, it's crazy.
They turned a mild profit 1 year, but like every other year, it was 20-some million dollar losses.
Wow.
And the user base is less than 500,000 and shrinking.
Wow.
So it's funny that you don't know what that is.
Yeah.
Because it's kind of hard to not know things about Donald Trump.
I just have turned mostly a deaf ear to all of that for a while now. Basically, the moment he wasn't president anymore, I'm like, oh, thank God, closing the book. And then every so often somebody's like, actually. It's not over yet.
I follow it a little bit because I like watching the late night monologues, you know, after they happen.
And yes.
Right. I'm not going to watch it on TV. I'm watching this shit on YouTube.
Yes.
And also, I almost never want to see the rest of the show.
Mm-hmm.
But like,
I didn't know there was still a rest
Colbert,
of the show.
Myers, Kimmel.
Sure.
And who's the last one?
Don Daly.
No. The guy from SNL who stared at the camera all the time.
Pete Davidson?
No. Older generation. I can't remember who he is.
Oh, Jimmy Fallon. Yeah.
All four of those are talking about Trump every single monologue.
Holy shit.
They are like the Trump update in joke form.
Kimmel's at the leader.
Kimmel is just straight up Donald Trump's bully. Because Donald Trump has acknowledged on social media that Kimmel gets under his skin because he just randomly talks shit on Kimmel. And Kimmel goes after him hard like every single night. Colbert used to do this thing where he didn't want to say Donald Trump's name on air because he'd gotten too much coverage.
Yeah.
So they created some, if you tweet at this account with a nickname for Donald Trump, they would just use the nickname and they wanted to not repeat any.
Okay.
So for a while, we were getting some gems like Tangerine Palpatine and shit like that. But awesome. I think like Colbert got, you know, sick of the bit at some point and just quit doing it.
Yeah.
But Kimmel does something like that, but like every day he has some kind of mean nickname for Donald Trump about like him farting or something. And you know, he'll just take a moment to land it real slow, and he always gets a laugh out of his audience. And sometimes it's not even funny. Like, sometimes he's just like, this man is straight up bullying Donald Trump. I mean, I'm here for it. But like that is how I deal with the Donald Trump stuff, because there's like the looming doom of maybe he'll be president again, mixed with all the bad shit that's happening to him right now and filling me and so many other people with schadenfreude.
Yes.
And then the presentation by those late night hosts, other than that, the one guy from SNL whose shit I never watch.
Yeah, Fallon. Like, yeah, that.
I just don't like his show.
That's
like,
fair.
Colbert is gold standard. Jimmy Kimmel, I would not watch if he were not Trump's bully.
Perhaps he knows that.
And
the longstanding Matt Damon thing is good. You know,
that was good. Yeah.
Seth Meyers has actually been kind of growing on me.
Fair. I don't know. Colbert is who I've seen when I've watched it, and I don't watch it very often.
Colbert is the best late night host I've ever seen in my life.
I mean, I watch Taylor Tomlinson's show a little bit here and there, like the highlights.
That's
not
a game show, though.
Right.
That's a game show that's designed to create TikToks and YouTube shorts.
Yeah, it's brilliant.
It's a really good content generator, but it's a boring show.
Speaking of TikTok, they just sued the U.S. today.
Did they? Ooh,
They put the lawsuit up for saying it's a First Amendment violation to ban us specifically on our app and tell us you have to sell it.
Mitt Romney recently...
That's what they're trying. That's what's coming up.
Good.
Romney basically said that the TikTok ban was related to not being able to have media control over the Israel-Palestine war.
I believe him.
I 100% believe it based on the fact that's
kind of what everyone suspected.
Yeah, it's the only place I see that conflict. Right. It's nowhere else.
Is that, yeah, TikTok, people can just say what they want to each other and the algorithm delivers it.
Yeah. I've been delivered nonstop coverage of that conflict.
Yeah.
It's been fantastic to be able to see what's going on, because I look at literally every other outlet and I'm like, Facebook, nope, can't even find it.
And it's starting to show up in the mainstream media, you know, like Bernie Sanders has got a bee in his bonnet about it at fucking last.
Yep.
And is saying shit on the Senate floor.
Yeah.
But I kind of wonder if any of this stuff would have gotten through mainstream media had it not been for TikTok, because it's not like Israel is new and it's not like the situation in Gaza is entirely new.
No, it's been going on for a long time now. This is just the most aggressive version of what's been going on for a long time.
Yeah, there's been a genocide situation being carried out for decades. We're just like at the final solution stage of it.
Yeah.
That's accelerated things so much. But I remember, you know, being in college and, you know, you'd hear stuff about Israel-Palestine, but it's always kind of like, well, they've always been fighting as the Middle East. Who cares?
Remember Rick and Morty did the whole bit on it?
Right. You know, and we all were in like the political science area. And even then it was kind of a taboo thing to talk too much about it.
Oh, yeah. You did not talk about it.
Even in the political science areas, it was just kind of this understanding of like, well, you know, they're all kind of like so much with the future. Let's get on with the past.
It's a simple argument.
Wash.
We needed Israel for militaristic purposes. And that was the argument for many years. Democrats won on it. Now it's flipped to Republicans saying the same thing on it, which is fascinating. Cause the last time we've just had this heavy of a party flip idea things, the party's flipped.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah. It's just a military foothold for globalists.
Yeah. Colonialism continues.
Yeah. So I feel like this, there would have been a movement for Palestinians a long, long fucking time ago if something like TikTok had existed. And I feel like if TikTok didn't exist now, you just delete it from history. I kind of wonder how many people even know about this. I mean, outside of like the college students who are wearing Che Guevara shirts.
I mean, it's been kind of wild. We listened to Macklemore's new song. It's not on Spotify. They're not going to let it be on Spotify. But it even talks about the fact that the TikTok ban's happening, but it's too late because you can't put the genie back in the bottle.
Yep.
An entire generation is aware that there's a lot of shit no one's willing to tell them and that they have to go find for themselves. And they are seeing all of the hypocrisy in the system.
It's also been incredibly damaging just to consumption under capitalism.
Yes.
TikTok has taught me how to cook and make so many things. And could I have looked these things up? Yeah. But I was never presented with that information interspersed between entertainment.
Right. Homesteading is at an all-time high. People are realizing there are places to go other than Zillow that will sell you land, just land, not farmland, homestead land, and it is fucking dirt cheap still. And there's a lot of people, especially around California, that are now choosing to go that route. Go live and I'm watching go live all of their TikToks.
You can get a big spread there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But the, like, big spreads in Missouri too.
But the land structures cost way more than the land.
Right. Oh, the, yeah. the land is so cheap. I was talking to a friend and they were talking about a TikTok they saw, and apparently in Wyoming they could get a plot, half acre homestead land, 3,000 flat.
And I was just building like, a home, and especially putting in the utilities yeah. and all that stuff is crazy level expensive.
Sure.
But although you could do the Earthship thing. Mm-hmm. If you're in a climate where that's conducive.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of land to be bought that's relatively dry climate. Like, Montana's empty.
Yeah.
Utah is empty.
I mean, I'd like Wyoming's to have it.
Mostly empty. Idaho's mostly empty.
The thing is, I want to go to the punk show.
Right. Idaho, then, because it's closer to Washington.
Right. It's like, I want to be able to go to gigs and shit. I need to be somewhere that I can fucking do music, see music, be around people.
I want an Earth home, like a hobbit hole, but I want Wi-Fi.
Well, like one of the books I'm going to be buying through TikTok is called The Lost Skills Book. And it's all about, like, how do you do vertical gardening? How do you make a home? Like, how do you build different pieces of a home from scratch that allows you to get off of the grid, get off of all of this stuff, have some of those basic utilities without paying out the ass? Book. Is that the other one?
Steal This Book was like the Anarchist Cookbook from back in the day. It was another one of those. Here's how you can live off the grid.
Nice.
There's also a lot of interesting things with recent, like, technological and I guess just how we assemble things. There's houses that you can 3D print.
Yes.
Out of concrete.
You can order a house on Amazon now.
You can order a house on Amazon and put it together, and it's like a double wide trailer.
Yeah. Which, like, 22 grand.
Right. You know, because if I got some homestead land, that'd be a fine way to start.
Right. Pay $3,000 for your homestead land, pay $22,000. Now you have a house that has most of what you need. You just got to figure out the last few pieces. What
you
need.
And I guess if you wanted to build it yourself at that point, if you hired some people and got the materials, I don't think building a house would really be that fucking hard.
There's a number
really, really dumb people I know do it all the time.
There's a growing number of Discord servers for homesteading where people are, like, trying to figure out how to get a community to buy a whole set of plots next to each other and, like, Amish community barn raise
the fucker. Amish.
Yeah, basically. Just, like, we're just going to raise our own fucking, like, barns together one plot at a time till we have our community built. And this is, like, a Discord server thing now. It's wild to see. And Discord's one of the only other platforms I know that isn't censoring, isn't messing with it. It's all just what Facebook would have been at its best. A way to connect with a bunch of people.
Do you have a public-facing profile for Discord? Like, can you be found on it and post things on it the way you could on Facebook?
You get to choose all of your settings. So you can do public, private, however you want. Some of the servers are public, some are private. The one that I built was private, so that only people who are given access can get in. Again, just like old school Facebook, where the only, like, you can only find it if somebody extends the offer.
So it's kind of like Facebook, except just groups.
Yeah. Yeah. And then you have DMs, so you have that capability. Like, I actually am on Discord DMs more than I'm on Signal or Facebook or any of the other ones at this point, because that's where everybody I know communicates.
That's kind of wild, because our Signal group fucking pops off hard.
Yeah.
I don't know what it was like. I opened it to 117 of arguing about something with food.
Look, rice is important.
Oh, right. Rice washing. Fucking 117 messages about rice washing.
I'm in more
washing.
Than one Signal group where if I don't look for a day, yes, it's double to triple digits just of, oh.
Right.
I love it because, you know, I like we have conversations
some,
and
we have some friends.
People.
We have some friends that are very passionate about food preparation, is what I learned day.
They're probably listening.
Yes. Yeah, I'm down for it. It's a fun group chat, but, like, it pops off a lot almost every day. And you telling me that you got shit that pops off harder is fuck, man. Like, you must. Well, I guess I know you take a lot of dumps, so you got time to read it.
Yeah, exactly. If you never stop having diarrhea, you will always have time
to be
so
good at social media.
Yeah, you'll have all the time. You'll see all the tiki talks.
So what you need is a little robot pizzazz that moves following you in rooms, so it's constantly cooking pizza. Would that be up there?
It'll slide right through, baby.
There you go.
Or like the
delivery under the door.
Fucking Baron Harkonnen's thing in Dune 2, where he's, like, in the floating chair and there's the flying orb, like, pumping chemicals and like, it's a toilet, right?
Yeah.
He's just spraying diarrhea into the toilet, and this thing's just like the big spherical thing's actually just a giant bidet washing his enormous ass crack.
I mean, I loved that setup anyway, because I looked at that. I'm like, you have the ability to take a dump whenever you want, and you probably have drugs just constantly being funneled into your body.
Yeah, that is what it is.
Right. Like, this is amazing. This setup you've got is the absolute fuck it like setup. It's amazing.
It's like he's got a nonstop wash of some kind of crazy painkillers and euphorics, and he's also smoking and fucking hitting a vape nonstop.
And let's also not forget that he is a psychopathic, absolute, brilliant murderer.
I'm just saying he lived his best life, start to finish.
He lived a best. He might. Harkonnen could have probably used their mind for good.
Oh yeah, I don't know. I'm not saying like
empire wise,
community's best life. Smart. I'm saying for a psychopathic murderer, he got to the top of that food chain.
I mean, almost. He got stabbed in the fucking head.
Well, that's where it's going to end sometime, right?
Some dictators go to their graves in peace. You know, some of them actually make it.
Fair.
Not relatively. Really. But
you know, aspirations.
Some suppose. Dictators die in peace.
Mostly pieces.
Dracula's doing pretty good.
Dracula's not really a dictator. Dracula's more of a, like a mass murderer. Dracula's are both.
Dracula has more in common with Ted Bundy than Putin. We'll put it that way.
I'm talking like Castlevania Dracula style.
Well, I don't.
Maybe because, you know, it's a show that's still ongoing.
Castlevania?
Yeah, the cartoon is amazing.
Really?
I've heard it's really good.
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that was a thing.
It's done in like anime style, and it feels like what you'd want out of D&D and fantasy without getting cheesy.
This was based off of that like old school video game set, right?
Yeah, Castlevania.
Yeah.
The initial couple seasons of the Castlevania for Netflix were written by Warren Ellis, which is why it got such a good start. Because Ellis is, I will make all of your nostalgic dreams dark and twisty.
Warren Ellis is one of those writers like Neil Gaiman that jumps from various media to various media, and I'm at least going to check it out every time.
That's fair. That's fair. Much in the way that if Aaron Sorkin writes anything, I'm gonna go see it.
I don't know of Aaron Sorkin writing anything other than scripts, though.
Yes.
Like Neil Gaiman and Warren Ellis write comics, they write novels, they write scripts. They are going media to media to media. Chuck Palahniuk writes comics sometimes and writes novels. But even like the movies made out of his books have been scripted by someone other than Chuck.
Yeah, that's fair. He doesn't quite hit all of the different pieces. Who else do we have on that short list, though? You got Neil Gaiman, you got Warren Ellis. Is there anybody else that just...
That's kind of the end of my list, actually. I can't think of any other writers that are prolific, consistently amazing, and jump from media to media to media.
Okay.
Yeah, the consistently solid stuff is a huge part. William Goldman, or Golding. Writer of The Princess Bride and that stuff. When I looked over their other work, I'm like, oh, okay. So they just bounce between books and movies and TV shows, and it's lots of good stuff you didn't even know was them.
Okay. Okay. I don't have anybody on my list because I frankly don't consume most other kinds of media. So
consume some media.
And TikToks.
Pretend it's a taco.
it's just like graphic novels and I never quite got along, and it kills me a little. Because like
you're missing out.
I know.
There's a specific vibe for me for graphic novels. I won't touch them for a while, and then I'll just listen to a bunch of records and just go on like a 3-4 hour binge, and it's amazing.
I think the only time I've ever read graphic novels and loved it was Death Stick. Like it had to be Death Stick based because then it had a real teenage vibe to it.
Oh yeah, what do you think I'm doing?
Oh, is that what that? Okay.
Like,
fair enough.
Well, if it doesn't require the full use of my brain, I'm probably mixing that in.
Lord Cogentes, I believe I recently lent you Transmetropolitan, even.
Yes, yes.
Which is also written by Warren Ellis.
I've read all but the last few pages of the first trade paperback. And yeah, Warren Ellis, pretty hot, pretty fucking good.
And what is this?
It's based on like, it's kind of, the character's kind of Hunter S. Thompson.
Okay.
But in like a Who Framed Roger Rabbit feeling sort of world.
And the year like 3,700.
And at one point, like he hops out of a cab and like flips off the cabbie and like nukes his cab or something. Yep. He just blows shit up along the way.
But it's okay. He's got journalist insurance, so he can't murder.
Right. You know, it starts off where he's just in squalor and all fucked up and the phone rings and someone's like desperate for his writing and they'll put up with anything he does. And it's an absolute fucking riot.
It's a $5 bill with a note on it written on it that says buy more bullets.
Yeah.
I love it. Okay. I'm very curious. It's called Metropolitan.
Transmetropolitan. Originally, the cool thing about it was Patrick Stewart was trying to talk anyone into allowing him to play the lead character, Spider Jerusalem, in a web series, but everyone said no one will ever watch a web series. No one's interested in this.
Almost anything Patrick Stewart does.
But this was a long time ago.
I would have said that a long time ago.
Yeah. All right.
Transmet started in the 90s.
Actually, there's one thing. It just dawned on me what Transmet kind of reminds me of is it is to sort of the Hunter S. Thompson vibe, almost the way Curse Words is to Wizards.
Yes. I will support that.
Have you read Curse Words?
No, not yet.
It's wrote that? Donnie Cates, who's been kind of a rising star in the last 6 years as a comic writer.
Okay.
And this was earlier in Donnie Cates' career. It's an indie title and kind of, you know, what got him writing the bigger titles, I think.
Sure. That was the break.
And actually it was Pitiless Justice who turned me on to this shit.
Oh, for real?
Uh-huh. And it's very much that flavor.
Okay.
It's the first page is a wizard with like an enormous beard and long hair riding a motorcycle with a koala. Like that's page one, full splash panel. That
is very Pitiless Justice.
Right.
Now, based on our recent conversation on, you know, writers and Rolling Across, it occurred to me, like, I wonder if Grant Morrison's written any books, because they've written comics and television and do bangers.
True.
And yes, they have. Ooh. And I need to read it. Listen to this great one. It's called Luda.
Luda.
And a drag queen initiates her protege into the magical arts in this phantasmagoric epic, the first novel from the legendary comic writer, Grant Morrison.
Cool.
It's like, I'm in.
Yeah. Cool. It's Grant Morrison.
Grant Morrison puts magic in anything. For anyone out there who doesn't know Morrison well, Morrison is your magic person, but in like not the flashy Disney way, but in like the creepy kind of this old book is made of skin way.
Grant Morrison has probably done a run on whatever your favorite comic title is, too, if it's yes. DC or Marvel.
And it's probably renowned as one of the better runs of the series, too.
Yeah.
What was the most recent one he did in DC or Marvel?
To my knowledge, Green Lantern, but that was years ago. I haven't been following major comic titles as closely lately. I pull like Star Wars and I pull X-Men. And I pull Immortal Thor, and I haven't even started reading the Immortal Thor books yet. And okay. That's it.
Here's how you'll know Morrison's work. If you've seen, spoiler alert, X-Men 97,
okay,
and what happens with Genosha,
yes,
that's all Morrison stuff.
Yeah.
Ooh. He's the one who came up with that stuff.
And that leads in really cleanly to Hickman,
yep.
Which is what I've had my fingers crossed for this whole time.
Is that we go to Hickman?
Yeah, House of X, Powers of Ten, yeah. That X-Men.
Yeah.
Do you remember the when we're going through with Moira and showing the different pasts she's seen?
Yep.
One of them was Genosha.
Ooh. Ooh, ooh, ooh.
Uh-huh.
It'd be lovely if we got to the storyline.
Yes.
Will it happen? I don't know, but...
See, I kind of like this, too, because the read that I've been getting... And I'm definitely not the only one who thinks this. I've seen other people online kind of expressing this idea that X-Men 97 is the same X-Men as at least the Wolverine in Deadpool.
Okay.
And that in the trailers for Deadpool at this point, it's been confirmed that that Wolverine's universe is gone. And... it kind of makes sense that one of the reasons it might disappear is because Moira restarts it.
Yeah.
And it would be, because I'm thinking like, how do you resolve, Wolverine is so good at harboring guilt.
Right.
How do you resolve Wolverine carrying the guilt of failing an entire universe?
Erase the universe.
Yeah, or make it inevitable and restart it.
Right.
Which Thanos. Is what Moira does.
Make it Thanos.
Make it Thanos.
Make it Thanos.
The only way to say it.
Make America Thanos again.
Good night.